There's a thousand pretty women living out there. They're all living the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a line of despair. So viva Las Vegas.
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You are listening to Katz with the Dish. This is John Katzalamidis. I write the Katz Report. It appears on the Las Vegas Sun, LasVegasSun.com, Las Vegas Weekly, LasVegasWeekly.com. I also write for The Sunday, the news magazine that comes out on The Sunday, except when it comes out on The Saturday. That's my impression of Trish McCrone, who's in the great state of Montana, which I think is the Garden State, or the Aloha State or something. She's up there in the snow. It's a big sky state, actually. And we'll be back in the early part of January to resume a double-barreled version of Cats with a Dish. So this week, I am flying solo for our year-end episode. And later, we're going to hear from a very tall and very beautiful guest. I'll tell you her name momentarily. But first, I want to talk about the column that I wrote that is the year-ender for the Las Vegas Sun, for the Katz Report in the Las Vegas Sun. And it's my annual year wrap, the wrap of the year. And it's a very lengthy column full of vignettes and funny asides and news breaks and all kinds of crazy stuff that recaps 2015. And I lead in by talking about the Frank Sinatra experience that I had writing a cover story about Frank Sinatra pegged to the celebration of his 100th birthday, which was December 12th, and all the fun I had and all the fulfillment that I enjoyed learning a lot about Frank Sinatra on his 100th birthday. I am a guy who had only listened occasionally to Frank Sinatra, and then this series of columns and this cover story came around. I did some very deep research about Sinatra, and what I came away with in interviewing people like Steve Wynn, Jerry Lewis, Steve Lawrence, Tony Bennett, and Wayne Newton, among many others, is how highly regarded he is even 12 years after his death. He is a very, or actually more than that, almost 20 years after his death. He is a highly revered individual, even by those who are legendary in their own right. To a person, all those names I mentioned view Frank Sinatra with an idolatry sensibility, if you will. When Frank Sinatra walked into a room, he was the man, and that was what I took away from this year. I really got to know about him and his influence on this city and the impact that the Rat Pack had in developing Las Vegas as the entertainment capital of the world. It was a cow town pretty much before those guys showed up, and when they took hold, the Strip became a very swanky, very cool place to be. And we are still trying to recapture that that whole swaggering vibe in this city to varying degrees of success. What else did I touch on in this column? I feel this. Frankie Marino, my friend, is going to have a Strip residency in 2016, and that's going to be announced soon. And you'll be hearing a lot more about Frankie on the Strip in 2016. He spent most of 2015 as a regular headliner at Cabaret Jazz, and he also traveled extensively. He is among the very, very best at what he does. The hang of the year, I say, was my night at Absinthe with Jerry Lewis and his family. The quote of the year from Lewis: "We used to do that act, but we had to quit. Dean hated being on the bottom." This was what he said during the human balancing act duo Vector. The single of the year from my friend Melody Sweets, her holiday send-up called Santa Maybe. The debut of the year in a venue, Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns at Cabaret Jazz, who performed there on December 28th, just under the gun. The tragic timing, Las Vegas style, Fluff LeCoq died December 10th at age 92. Just 2 days later, the show that she helped create, Jubilee, announced that it was closing in February after a 34-year run. What else can I tell you? I had no idea Seth MacFarlane was such a great deliverer of standards. Great performance, highlighted by his rendition of One for My Baby, One for the Road during the Sinatra 100, a Grammy celebration show at Encore Theater. I give a plug to Oscar Goodman's dinner series. Penn Jillette has shed 100 to 115 pounds since the fall of 2014. And that is the equivalent of a flyweight boxer, by the way. All this and much, much more, much, much more. Unexpected treat of the year. Pitbull's rowdy residency at Axis Theater at Planet Hollywood was one of the very best shows of the year. He's supposed to be back in the spring. Catch him. A likable star who was not a bankable star, sad to say. Suzanne Summers, whose highly appealing show failed to sizzle at Westgate Cabaret. Find all that stuff at LasVegasSun.com. And now, I give to you first Josh Bell with his weekly movie wrap, and then my guest for the duration of the show is Susan Anton, who's bringing her show, Almost Home, into Cabaret Jazz on January 8th and 9th. She's going to be in here talking about her Las Vegas band, her Las Vegas residency, and her history dating to her appearance in the Miss America pageant in 1970 when she was Miss California and almost won. So stick around. I know I will.
Viva Las Vegas! Viva!
One of them, maybe even two of them, is here to see Dahmer Goo goes free.
Are you sure you ain't just being paranoid?
Our best bet is this duplicitous fella ain't as cool a customer as Daisy here.
That's Kurt Russell and Samuel L. Jackson in The Hateful Eight, the new film from Quentin Tarantino. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters this week. After playing exclusively in 70mm film projection, The Hateful Eight is now open in general release. Tarantino's hyper-violent, hyper-talky western takes place almost entirely inside a cabin during a blizzard on the Wyoming frontier, where the vile characters of the title have holed up. The characters spend the first half of the movie talking in circles, warily prodding each other to expose hidden agendas. The increasingly bloody payoffs in the final hour don't quite make up for the sluggish first half, and Tarantino's wordy dialogue has lost some of its charm, especially in its showy and often misguided use of the N-word. I give The Hateful Eight 2.5 stars out of 5. Also opening this week exclusively at the Cinemark Samstown is Carol, a lesbian romance set in the 1950s, starring Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara.
What do you do on Sundays?
Nothing in particular. What do you do?
Oh, nothing lately. I mean, if you'd like to come visit me sometime, you're welcome to. At least there's some pretty country around where I live.
In director Todd Haynes' achingly beautiful adaptation of Patricia Highsmith's 1952 novel The Price of Salt, elegant, composed housewife Carol Aird, played by Cate Blanchett, and shy shopgirl slash aspiring photographer Therese Bellavett, played by Rooney Mara, have to hide their burgeoning courtship even as it grows more intense. Haynes brilliantly captures each small moment of both grace and indignity as the characters quietly rebel against societal constraints. I give Carol 4 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and my blog at joshbellhateseverything.com.
Welcome back. Sitting with me now is a woman who is a star of a stage and screen and recording studio. She's going to be on stage at the Smith Center's Cabaret Jazz Room on January 8th and 9th for a show titled Already Home, because she is already home. Those are 7 o'clock shows. Find the ticket information on the Smith Center website. Welcome to Cats with the Dish for the first time, Susan Anton.
Hi, John.
How you doing?
I'm great. It's so good to be with you. Last time I saw you, we were judging the Miss Nevada pageant.
I know. Who were we to judge?
I know. Who were we to judge, indeed?
Well, that is true. One of the highlights of that whole thing was an eye-opener in so many ways, was getting to know you. I'm serious about that, and I wrote that too. It was really a treat
to
be able to spend that kind of time with you. Now, how I got involved was Myron thought that it would be good to have a journalist involved in the lineup. You're involved because you're a former finalist.
I was.
Me about that. Let's start with that experience.
Well,
huh?
Yeah, boy, digging back into the archives now.
1969.
1969. I was 12 years old. Now, I'm tall, so I got away with it. Now, 1969, I was Miss California, and I went to the 1970 Miss America pageant, and I came in second, tied for second runner-up to Miss Michigan, who won Miss America that year.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was really a transformative opportunity for me because I'm from a little town in Southern California, Yucaipa, California.
Yucaipa High.
Yeah,
product.
Exactly. Uh-huh. I am. Raised on an apple ranch.
The pride of Yucaipa High, you must be.
I like to think. Not scholastically, but but because I went on to actually, have a little success along the way.
Was anyone else famous out of Yucaipa High?
You know, I think that there was an athlete. I can't remember. I think we might have had somebody that made it into the big leagues, but I can't remember.
Okay, I'll look him up.
Yeah, but it was pretty thrilling, too, because I thought that, you know, coming from Yucaipa, I was going to marry my high school sweetheart. I was going to teach kindergarten and just have a sweet life in a small town. And then I got involved with the Miss America pageant, and I got on that big stage for the first time in Atlantic City, and I was able to sing with a huge orchestra in front of all those people, and I realized, oh, I want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw my hat over the fence, and I'm going to chase that dream.
And those are the days when the Miss America pageant was seen by many, many, many millions of people. It was a rite of passage every year.
It really, yeah. City. Well, you had three networks then. Mm-hmm. You know, you had the three big networks, and I think NBC carried it forever.
Mm-hmm.
And my good friend Sam Haskell's gotten back involved with it now, and he's got it back, you know, back up and running on network again.
Yeah.
So that's kind of exciting. But it was a big deal for a little 17-year-old girl from Yucaipa, California.
What did you sing?
I sang Forget Your Troubles, Come On, Get Happy.
Okay.
You know, because you wanted to have a pageant-friendly song where you could be cute and perky, mm-hmm. And smile a lot.
You didn't like sing Take Another Piece of My Heart by Janis Joplin?
No, no. I would have now. I would have like Stairway to Heaven or something, but there's
you'd
a
win.
Lady. Yeah.
If I was on the judging panel, you'd
yeah, exactly right. That, exactly right.
So how did that, you say it changed you. What was the result of you coming out of that experience? How did your career take off
well,
as a result of that?
It wasn't like there was a, you know, that it opened a lot of doors. Actually, back in 1969 and 70, if you had a beauty pageant title and you were going into show business as an actor or a singer, people looked at you pretty skeptically, you know, like, well, does she have any talent?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, another beauty queen.
Yeah.
And that was more when the Diane Keaton look and that more, you know, it was before Farrah kind of really hit big. And so there was more of that organic look.
Yeah, it was not a glamorous necessarily mm-mm. period.
No,
was it in the late 60s?
Not in the late 60s. Mm-hmm. You know, Farrah came along and fortunately changed that mm-hmm. for us tall blonde people that, you know, was like, hey, I'm organic too, just in a different way.
I just happen to be tall.
I just happen to be tall and blonde and, you know.
And
from California. But the pageant gave me a chance to be on a lot of stages over the course of my year as Miss California, perform a great deal, and get some confidence, and really solidify the fact that I knew that this was what I wanted to do. And just by the grace of God, I met good people along the way that kind of would introduce me to, here's a guy that is going to be a great arranger, a conductor for you. So I worked with somebody for a really long time, helping me learn musically, you know, how you put a show together. And then there were the little clubs. There was this great little club in Beverly Hills, Marshall Edson's Ye Little Club, which was the club that everybody, and Joan Rivers used to play there all the time doing her comedy.
Marshall Evans Ye Little Club.
Yeah, the Ye Little Club, and it was this
sounds so rustic.
It was this happening little place in Westwood, actually, and so I kind of would woodshed in there, and so I learned a lot that year that I was Miss California.
If it wasn't for you going into the entertainment field, what and around this maybe even pre-pageant era, was there anything else you're interested in? Did your guidance counselor say you would be tailor-made for this particular field or vocation?
Yeah,
or industry?
I really thought I'd be a nursery school teacher. I love kids. I love kids. I have a lot of patience for kids. I'm one of five kids myself. You know, I come from a big family. And I like being around little people because they're honest. And, you know, what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
And, I really thought that was going to be what I was going to do.
I remember I got to know who you were through TV.
Uh-huh.
Being on TV shows.
Yep.
Mike Douglas.
A lot. Yeah.
And Merv Griffin a lot.
A lot.
And
Merv
TV
was
commercials.
Big. Yes, yes.
Cigars.
Muriel Cigars. Mm-hmm. And Serta Mattresses.
The Perfect Sleepers.
Sanyo. And,
yeah.
Yeah, no, commercials were big.
And you're on the Love Boat.
I did do that. The only reason I did it, I went on the Love Boat, was because they were going to China. And I thought, well, gosh, you know, we'd just opened up the talent, you know, the exchange, cultural exchange with China, because, you know, we didn't travel there
right.
for many, many, many
Very
years.
Very rare to be. Cuba is become.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So cultural exchange, of course, what would represent the United States better than the Love Boat? And so, let's go to China.
That's our entry point.
And so,
expect more of this.
Yep.
folks.
But it was my, it was, you know, here we are, America's,
that whole,
you know,
cast is still alive, by the way. All that cast of the Love Boat.
They
still
are
with
still
us.
Alive, which yeah. is kind of amazing.
We should, I think we're sending them back to China.
Yeah, know. There they go. But it was a big, you know, star-studded two-hour event, and Linda Evans and John Forsythe and Ursula Andress, and I mean, Lee Majors and myself, and we were just all mm-hmm. over there in China on the Great Wall of China. It was just kind of an extraordinary adventure.
Surreal life yeah. On the Great Wall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Tell me a story about Merv Griffin. You're on that show a lot.
I was.
Like 30-something times.
Merv was one of the, you know, like, the pageant gave me my jumping off, mm-hmm. and then Merv gave me his stage as the greatest opportunity. He had me on literally almost every week. It became like my living room, my go-to place. I even had a parking space over there at the studio. Merv just was incredibly supportive, always generous, always believed in me. You know, mm-hmm. he said, it's not often, and you know, this is Merv saying it, so it's not me. He said, when somebody looks the way that I do, but can sing the way that I sing, he said he just really supported my talent, and so he just gave me his show to be on there. And from there, that's where Fred Silverman saw me, and Fred was president of ABC at the time, signed me to a deal at ABC, and we and created two different shows that I was in.
Variety shows, right?
There was one with Donnie that the Osmonds produced.
Right, right.
Mel Tillis and myself, taking a little bit country, a little bit rock and roll kind mm-hmm. of, you know, spin on that. And Mel, it was called Mel and Susan Together, and it was a summer replacement show, and we were on for about six weeks. And then I did Cliffhangers, which was an episodic show,
right?
With Ken Johnson, who directed and created that, who also did Bionic Woman.
Okay.
So then Fred went over to NBC, and then he took me over to NBC, and that's when I did Presenting Susan Anton. So Merv's show was literally
that was the catalyst for all of what
came,
you talked about.
It was Merv.
How did you get on the show in the first place,
Merv? Well, you know, a lot of those talk shows were made available to me when I did get the Muriel Cigar account. The Muriel Cigar account was a very big deal at the time because Edie Adams, and a lot of your listeners may not know who she is, but she was this iconic gal from the 50s, fiery red hair, married to Ernie Kofax, who was one of the early icons on television. And she was the spokeswoman, you know, for Muriel Cigars. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they were now moving Edie aside and bringing in a new spokesperson. And so they launched this huge campaign, and they auditioned hundreds and hundreds of girls from the East Coast and the West Coast. And they narrowed it down to three. And then they had us literally, they voted on who would be the next Muriel Cigar representative. We did commercials. We each did a commercial, and then we did a photo, fully clothed photo layout in Playboy. But we were fully clothed, and then people would vote for who they wanted to be the next Muriel Cigar Girl.
That makes you a Playboy model, regardless.
There you go. And so I was voted into office, and so it was kind of a big entertainment story. Mm-hmm. And so then the talk shows, of course, then there was a little, that was kind of like the hook, the new Muriel Cigar spokesperson.
And later on, and we're going to talk about your show at the Cabaret Jazz, of course, but you were in Las Vegas in the stage show, the Rockettes.
Yeah.
Spectacular at the Flamingo for quite a while. Talk about that.
Yeah,
period.
A long time. Well, you know, it was really...
thousands of shows.
Well, we did, yeah, close to 5,000.
Wow.
It was interesting, John, because, you know, I was really lucky to... I've worked in Vegas, you know, since the early 70s, you know, and started off at the Hacienda Hotel in a funny little show that was there. A review show, and then just kind of worked my way up, and eventually after I was on television and had my own shows, then I started being an opening act for everybody up and down the strip, from, you know, George Burns to Paul Anka, mm-hmm. and on and on. Worked with absolutely everybody and every hotel. It was a thrilling time. And then kind of got pretty burnt out on it, and I went off and I did Broadway and I did other things, and I didn't think that I would ever come back. You know, and the town was changing. And then I got the offer to do this Radio City tour. And it was the first time that the Rockettes were touring outside mm-hmm. of Radio City for their 60th anniversary. So I did a 72-city tour. And then the Flamingo Hilton bought the show. And I said, okay, I have to go back. I have to go back to Vegas because I have to finish what I started. I'll go for 1 year. Well, here I am. I'm still here.
Moved to Las Vegas at that period?
We it took us a while. We moved for the first year. My husband Jeff and I came with
the
show.
He's our studio audience today.
He's sitting over there to collaborate.
And him from Seinfeld.
Yes. It moved. Raymond the masseuse.
It moved.
Yes, that's
for George.
And it does for me too.
I hope so.
Yeah, 23.
George had a problem with it, but you have no problem with it.
No. 23 years married, but anyway. We came for the 1 year, and in that time, because my husband Jeff is a director and a filmmaker, and he said, you know, we need to open up a production studio. There weren't very many. And he said, there's a lot of people here that need commercials. He said, I think that I can do that. And so we opened Big Picture Studios, and that was 20 years ago. Yeah. And so here we still are, Big Picture Studios going strong, and we decided to become residents, and we divide our time between here and Los Angeles, but this is home.
This is your hometown.
This is home,
The first time I saw you perform was out at the Suncoast in Vocal Soup.
Oh my gosh,
yeah,
sure.
That was a great show.
You know, that was so much fun.
I love that show. Yeah.
Thank you.
Wide range of talent.
It was very eclectic.
And Martin?
In Martin Navera, Dominic Clint, Allen, and Clint Holmes, and myself.
Right.
I was doing a show in Palm Springs, and I got a call from, because I've known Clint forever. You know, everybody in this town knows Clint and loves Clint.
Yeah.
And Kelly.
I don't like him.
I know. Well, you know, don't let him know.
Long history of discord.
It'll hurt his heart. Don't tell him. He's very sensitive about these things. And
sat with him at the Santa Fe show the other night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he's always out and about.
Yeah.
He's
immersive, man.
He's everywhere.
He's out and he's absorbing what's going on.
Clint. Everything.
Yeah.
I don't know how he does it.
He truly
loves entertainment more than anybody I've ever met.
Yeah, it's fun to watch a show with him.
It's just so in him. Mm-hmm. It's just so completely in him. And Kelly, you know, his beautiful wife, I think is one of the most talented, funniest women that I've ever encountered.
Yeah, you've worked with a lot of people in your career. Kelly, I feel like, is sitcom network quality talent.
Boggles my mind.
Yeah.
The girl should have her own show. She should just be all over.
Like Saturday Night Live?
Without a doubt. Just put a camera on her and let her go.
Right.
Yeah. You know, she knows how to do it all. She's a super talented girl. Mm-hmm. But Vocal Soup, Clint called up and he said, I'm thinking about, want to get these four voices together, kind of have just fun. I'm going to call it Vocal Soup. And I'm going, Vocal Soup? Okay. and met with Dominic and Martin and Clinton and Jeff Nyman. That's when I met Jeff Nyman, who's going to be my musical director for the shows at Cabaret Jazz. And I thought, what a great group of guys. And that's how I got involved with Vocal Soup. And we had about three outings of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a great night. I saw that, and I wrote, it became a catchphrase that night, but I threatened to rush the stage that night when Dominic was singing Urgent, a Foreigner. I came out with a sax solo.
Yep.
That was a great night.
Yeah.
That was the first time I'd ever seen him. Like, wow, she is really good.
Thank you.
So tell us about the show at Cabaret Jazz. I know you've got a burning Las Vegas band behind
you. I do.
And you mentioned Jeff as your MD, music director who's worked with Clint for his whole run at John Wiedemeyer, the guitarist.
Love John Wiedemeyer.
Keith Nelson, bass.
Bass.
Jess Gopin, drummer extraordinaire.
Yep.
Jess has got a tie that he wears. It's also a
With the washboard.
Yeah.
I heard about it, and then because I heard that Clint used it, so now it's out. we will have none of that.
You need to get some cowbell earrings.
How about you know, corrugated underwear? Let's work on that.
Which also has been used, but not on stage. And Jamie Hosmer, also from Santa Fe and the Fat City. And how did you assemble all these guys?
Well, Jeff Nyman. You know, I had every intention. I've been working in L.A. the last 6 months with I have a band in L.A. that I've been with. They've been with me. We've been with each other for 35 years.
Wow.
You know, so they're my brothers. They're my guys. And we reconnected because I just thought, you know, life is too short and you've got to do what you love with the people that you love. Mm-hmm. And so I called the guys up and I said, let's put some gigs together. And so we did the Purple Room out in Palm Springs. And Herb Alpert has a beautiful club in Bel Air called Vibrato. So we've been playing there. And I just got back into it. And I said, you know, I really love this. I miss this. And then I called Myron Martin over at the Smith Center, and I said, Myron, it's time for me to come and play Cabaret Jazz. Do you think we could work something out? And he said, yep, I think we can do that. And so, of course, you know, he did, got right on it. And I thought I was going to bring my guys from L.A., but, you know, it just got too expensive.
Mm-hmm. You have to bring them in.
By the time you bring them in and you get the hotel.
Right.
And then, when you know, trying to get enough time to rehearse so you're really sharp and you're really great. Because this is my first time in cabaret jazz. And so I want to go in. I want to go in with all the, you know, guns firing. I want mm-hmm. to be ready. I want to be right. So I called Jeff Nyman. I said, can we put a band together? Can I bring in my charts? And can we put a group of guys together? And can we do it locally? And he said, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And so he
mm-hmm.
put the call out. And like you said, he assembled some of the best musicians that we've got in town. And we've had a couple vocal rehearsals already. And I'm so excited, you know, that we had one really rough rehearsal with the whole band. And I just know it's going to be so fresh for me.
They're great players, and they're really highly regarded, and they're great guys.
They're great guys.
Yeah, they're fun to be around, and they're fun
And they're
to
even
watch.
Tall. There's tall people.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is really nice
James
for me.
James taller than you? I think
Jamie, on stage,
might be at least as tall as you.
Yeah.
You made a joke at the composer showcase. I think it was a composer showcase when you got on stage and the microphone was about 5 feet tall. I used to date a guy this tall.
Exactly right. That would be right.
That would be funny, yes.
It's kind of like George Burns. Yeah, George Burns used to, I worked with George a lot, and he'd come out and everybody would stand and cheer, and he would say, that's okay. I figure if I can stand up, so can you. And then he said, you know, people are always asking, why am I dating women younger than me? He said, I'm 99 years old. And women my age are dead. I have to date women younger. So I had to date guys shorter than me.
Well,
there
that
weren't
one
that
was
many.
5'2", 5'3", something like that, Dudley Moore?
Dudley was
9 inches shorter than
5'2" and a half. Yeah, Dudley was.
Tell me about the set list for this show. I mean, you've got all kinds of different genres, artists, Mark Cohen, Bob Dylan, the Beatles.
Kenny Loggins, Mark
Cohen. Tell me
about
the thought process there.
I started off with the Mark Cohen song Already Home mm-hmm. because that's what this is about. This is sometimes you know, as you travel through life. I started here in, like I said, the early 70s at the Hacienda Hotel. Went out into the world, did a lot of other things. I've had a really wonderful life and a great career. And it's a full circle thing. You know, I've been around a while now. And now I'm coming home again.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Already Home was, you know, this is where they know my name. This is where I lay my hat. This is, you know, mm-hmm. it's good to be Already Home. So Already Home is why I named the show that. But we've got Mark Cohen, Neil Diamond, James Brown, The Beatles, Bob Dylan, Beth Nielsen Chapman.
Stevie Wonder on that list?
Stevie Wonder is on that list.
Joan Osborne?
Yep, yeah. Definitely. Joan Osborne and Bruce Springsteen. Great great song that he wrote after 9/11 called You're Missing.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I get chills.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
You mentioned something before we got on air that I hadn't really readily thought of, and that is that most of the headliners that are local at the Cabaret Jazz that are recurring Las Vegas artists are gentlemen.
They're
are
all
guys.
They're all men.
They're all boys. The
they
boys
are.
Club. And you're possibly looking for a way to
I want to get in
crack
there.
Crack the safe, huh?
Yeah. I want to get in there. We need a little female representation.
Well, yeah. I hope that happens.
I do, too.
Yeah.
I think it would be really fun. I think, and then to kind of broaden that up, you know, and get all the gals up there and put a little female energy into that room.
Yeah, well, if that ever happens, then you have guest stars come
in.
You could have all that kind of. You could have a lot of great, you know, this
right.
women singers in this city.
Oh, Love. I'll get Darlene Love in there. You know, we did Hairspray mm-hmm. together.
That's right. You were mm-hmm. in Hairspray.
At the Hollywood Bowl.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I know some singers.
You got a list of them. Well, Susan Anton of Las Vegas, Nevada. We got to wrap this one up, but you're going to be on stage January 8th, January 9th, 7 p.m.
Yep.
Already Home is the title of the show. It's a freewheeling, wide-ranging, super talented night of music and revelry at Cabaret Jazz. Find ticket information at the Smith Center website, and post-game we'll come back in after they sign you to a long-term deal over there.
Yeah.
And we'll talk all about that.
Let's do that.
And thanks to Jeff for sitting in here.
Yay. Thanks, John.
You bet. Mila,